Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast, or should it be the TV Torture Machine? I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, the Hollywood Reporter's chief TV critic, Tim Goodman, who made me watch CSI Cyber this week. Hi, Tim.
I'm so giddy right now.
Oh, my God. I can't get the stink off.
Like a crazy cackle. Oh. It's true. Oh,
that's the evil laugh. Yeah, that's your evil laugh.
Oh my God. I noticed that there was a distinct silence when I mentioned I'm watching episode two. So people don't know, let's set this up. We knew that CSI, CBS version, CSI, whatever it is, CSI Cyber.
Yes.
In their 10,000 different shows that they have CSI, Cyber comes out. I did have to review it for the Hollywood Reporter because I'm too smart.
And you got a sucker to review it instead.
We had somebody else review it. But for our podcast purposes, I thought it'd be a fantastic idea if you know, Mr. Legendary Macworld editor would go take a look at it. And that was so good. What happened?
The episode was called Kidnapping 2.0 because the old kidnapping got an upgrade.
I love it already, as they say in Hollywood. I love it already. Oh,
it was a thing of beauty. Are all the CBS procedurals terrible?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Sorry, I should have told you that.
Did you? I thought last time I saw a CSI or something or like I watched a couple episodes of The Mentalist with my mom when I was visiting her. They seemed not quite this terrible, and it may be because I know a little bit more about technology, and so that adds a whole other like layer of anything you see that's portrayed on TV, you're going to realize that it's not like it really is, because it all has to be simplified, right?
Exactly.
But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, because I live in cyber. I don't live in Las Vegas or Miami or New Orleans or New York or any of the other places where CSIs have taken place, but I do live in cyber.
You apparently live
the location. So okay.
Yes, I will say just quickly, I don't know all their other stuff is their procedurals. They're very good at most of their procedurals.
Yeah.
Not all of them are good. And look, it's not stuff that all of us are going to watch or want to watch, but they do a very good job of that.
Yeah,
but,
and that's what surprised me is that although it is on one level, I would say competently, it's a Bruckheimer show. I mean, it's competently shot. It's got that kind of warm color palette, and there's lights, nice backgrounds, and it's set in sort of DC. So they've got some DC kind of stuff going on. So Oscar winner Patricia Arquette leads the cast. I'd like to say that she's good and brings a level of gravitas to this, but I feel she brings her patented medium level performance here. The shooting, also, when I said that it's a competently produced, the reason I hesitate on that is that in order to give it more of a cyber feel, like there are all of these shots where they keep doing these quick cuts, but they're not actually quick cuts. They're just like quick, like it's like they're zooming in, but the zooms are like choppy. And all their transitions are like videotape mistakes.
Oh. Wow.
Because it's cyber. You've just been cybered.
I'm sorry. I had a flashback to like a 1988 MTV video.
Yeah. It's very Max Headroom. So Patricia Arquette, I can't say that she's good. She gives a real medium kind of vibe. She's a cyber psychologist, which is not a thing.
No, cyber psychologist.
Not a thing. And there is a moment where they're looking for this real Bonnie and Clyde type who they think have kidnapped 2.0. This baby. And they don't know where they've gone, and she looks at a map and says, all humans have a tendency to run to high ground when they're under stress. They'll be there at a bar. Cut to a bar in the hills where they are, it's like, you know, so it's this bogus psychology stuff that is not cyber in any way, I have to say. Again, not cyber.
Was it a paper map?
No. It was like a super 3D cyber map. Oh, are you kidding? Any chance? This is a show where there is a scene where they go to the morgue, and instead of it being a real morgue, it's a hologram morgue where there are hologram bodies and there's a hollow Quincy there, and he's like gesturing away bodies till he gets to the last body, and then he says, I believe the line is display torso, and then reveals through his hologram ways certain things in the dead body that give information about how this person died. There is a shootout where there's a sniper on a motor on a dirt bike who is shot by James Vanderbeek, who is uh-huh. your other lead here. He plays Elijah Mundo, actual name.
Elijah Mundo.
Yes.
And, that's awesome.
And don't correct him. No one wants to correct a Mundo.
Oh, correct the Mundo. Oh, wow.
Yes, a great one. Yes. Anyway, it is Peter McNichol is lends some dignity to the part to the show, which I feel really bad for him.
He did until the pilot aired.
And actually, Peter McNichol and Patricia Arquette's scenes together are okay. And he, you know, Peter McNichol's doing his thing. And it's fine, but it's just this the whole FBI chatter is weird. There's this whole subplot where there's a new guy who is brought on board, and they're the other ones who are all types. These are all these, you know,
oh, I'm
hacker
reading here,
types.
By the way, that there's an introverted tech genius with a quick wit.
Yes, yes. who's also kind of tubby, because, you know.
And there's an expat hacker.
Yeah. Yep.
Can you tell me what an expat hacker is?
Well, they
is that like a Snowden?
They hack from outside of the from outside of patriotism. They're sort of like ex yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Now correct me if I'm wrong, but there's somebody called Raven Ramirez, not Ramirez, unless they misspelled it wrong.
Yeah, I think it's Raven Ramirez. Ramirez, yes.
Ramirez. Okay.
She doesn't have a lot to do except roll her eyes in the.
Oh,
in the pilot.
She is, according to CBS, she is, quote, a rookie tech who is an expert in social media. So
yeah,
does she?
She's
like
tweeting.
A lot of,
she's live tweeting the sniper from the dirt bike is being live tweeted by Raven. I think.
I would love, like, every time she comes on, she just has emoticons. No
let
words.
Let me tweet this. It is. It's not good. I mean, that's the bottom line. Is it's not good. It's dumb. There's a the plot is essentially that there's somebody who's got a baby monitor, like, and their baby is stolen, and they wake up because they hear voices in the house, but it turns out they're foreign voices coming across the speaker in the baby monitor. And so what caused this? And then and then Patricia Arquette is on the case, and she says, this is a cyber crime, I know it. And Peter McNichol's like, all right, it's yours, the case is yours. And they then work the case in a series of kind of increasingly ridiculous connections, including they'll go to high ground and then with a dirt bike sniper whose fingertips are burned off with acid, so they can't identify the dirt bike sniper nor pay anybody because he never has any lines and we never see his face.
Does he shoot anybody with the sniper?
Oh no!
While
he killed
the
Bonnie and Clyde type who kidnapped them are both murdered, including amusingly actually the kind of hippie guy who is the Clyde in this scenario. While his girlfriend has been shot and is laying on the ground, and he turns to Elijah Mundo and says, why'd they kill her, man? And instead of getting down behind the car, and then he's promptly shot and is dead. And I would say it has all the marks of a show where people are like, you know what would be really good at a time like this? Some gunfighting.
Gunfighting and some hippies.
So I've got some hippies. So I got two other points that I wanted to make. One is they decode this conversation becomes important. The conversation that's overheard by the parents when the baby is kidnapped with the foreign voices of foreigners.
Yes. So they cause all kinds of problems.
Oh, they do. They do. Also, I imagine that every grandparent in America who watched CSI Cyber called their children to warn them against the dangers of having an IP baby monitor because the hackers could get in there and steal their babies. So I'm sure that happened the next day. So two points. The conversation, there is a painfully long conversation between Patricia Arquette and James Vanderbeek, where they're listening to the foreign voices and saying things like, "Well, that it's like they're saying strings of numbers, and they keep getting keep getting higher. Oh, and that word, that's a word, that's the Saudi Arabian currency. And oh, the voices keep going faster and the numbers keep getting higher. And you're sitting there thinking, yes, okay, figure this out. And then James Vanderbeek says something like, it's almost as if they're negotiating a price for something. And then Patricia Arquette says, like an auction. And James Vanderbeek says, it's an internet baby auction, which is great because we figured that out like 2 minutes ago when they first said there were numbers and currency. But they're very slow to the point. And then later they play that scene through an internet translator where computers translate the foreign language into English, which is a thing that can happen. But what you get is those robotic voices, the computer voices that are that are trying to translate it. And in this case, no, the computers translate it into people doing speaking in English with funny foreign accents. So it's like, yes, I will bid $200,000 for the baby. Okay.
So the computer can do that.
Computer does an accent, yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that's good. And then the final thing that I thought was the most impressive is the last scene of the plot proper involves a car flying through the air after a car chase and going into a lake.
Oh, nice.
So there's a car chase on a dirt road straight out of the Dukes of Hazzard. Car goes in the water. Yeah. And then James Vanderbeek happens to arrive on the scene just in time to dive under the water, pull out the baby, hand the baby to Patricia Arquette, who gives it baby mouth to mouth and saves the baby, thus ending the episode. This was a bizarre. I don't know who would watch this and think that this was anything. It's not a thing.
That's kind of sexist. I wonder why couldn't she dive in and get the baby and hand it?
I don't know.
What if the cyber psychologist was a dude and he didn't know how to like mouth to mouth babies? Yeah. I mean, who does? But still,
I don't know.
Wow,
it's not good. Is what I'm saying. It's not good. I would say that the pilot of Scorpion was probably more ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
but not as horrendously like bad. I would say Scorpion was ridiculous, but I was amused by some of the, like, there's the guy with the hat and there's the waitress with the heart of gold. And here it's just like, there's this hacker, there's the fat hacker and there's the Asian hacker and there's the black hacker. I mean, it literally is like, these are our types. And then there's the crusading James Vanderbeek. And then there's Patricia Arquette, who has got the kind of squinting, I sense danger kind of thing going on because she's a psychologist. And then what that shows to me is that the show doesn't actually want this to be like computer crime is not enough of a thing. So we got to back it out and have this whole like psychological level that isn't even about the thing. So anyway, it's bad. I know this is going to come as a surprise to everybody, but it is not good. And don't make me watch anymore, please. I beg you.
I love the fact that it's just so hacky. Get it? See, yeah. It's hacky. So what, tell me again about the morgue where he said, what? Bring up the torso? What is it? Like you can...
I want to say it's like eliminate torso, but that's not. It's like enhanced torso or
enhanced
highlight torso. Because it's like it's like holograms of the dead bodies, but not the actual dead bodies. And there's several points in this where there are like when they imagine that it might be an auction, it sort of dissolves to like a hologram of these a man and a woman in cyberspace doing the auction. So you see the German man and his wife,
and then you see
the Saudi Arabian man and his wife, and it's all very cyber.
I was wondering how they were going to make that happen. I mean, that's the downfall of cyber, right? When things happen on a computer or inside the little wires of a computer, it's hard to make it visually stimulating for the audience to tell a story that way.
Even there, I feel like they could have done a better job of it being like they have a video conference at one point where there's a crime scene and they want a video conference with the guy who's at the crime scene from their crazy video wall headquarters that they've got.
Oh yeah.
And and when they talk to the guy from the crime scene, it's like he's a TV reporter standing in front of a camera. It's like well framed and the camera is obviously 6 feet back from him. And I thought, this would be an opportunity for you to do it like a selfie where you actually would shoot that part on like a cell phone facing him and like he's got his cell phone out and he's talking to them. Not only would that add some realism, but it actually might make it feel more real and like dynamic in that it would be all kind of jiggly and you'd be close in on the actor. And that might actually be interesting, but they you know, no, it's instead it's this like weird omniscient, like, does he have a camera crew to in case he gets a call from CSI Cyber? So I felt like there are probably ways to do this show to display some of this stuff and have it be a little more, maybe not realistic, but a little more I don't know, in line with what reality would be while still being dynamic. And instead it doesn't, it feels almost like they're running from it.
Oh my God.
So I don't know. It's, I have not, I'm not
an
expert.
Did they mention the Darknet?
They didn't. Well, I mean, it's sort of implied because there is a secret network of these, hackers. Oh, at one point they go to a, they do break a 20 digit password by looking at the tattoos on these guys they find in a warehouse. And
how did you miss that part?
And then they put the 20 digit password in one time and it's correct. And that they move on to the next thing. Yeah.
I bet next week there's going to be like a button on the keyboard that says darknet. Then you just click it and you go to the darknet.
Yeah.
Subnet. Sure. I gotta be a subnet. Bring back 24. At least it was funny.
I think what they're trying to get at, it's a first episode. I think they're trying to get the humor to be in the interactions with all of the underlings. I could see that. I could see the relationships between the underlings being amusing, where they're the real techie people. I feel like to do that, though, you really need to undermine Patricia Arquette and James Vanderbeek. You almost need them to be clueless.
Yes.
The FBI just put me in charge of this. I'm a lawman. I don't know nothing about no cybers. And then your tech team is like, we can help you out. We can fix this for you. Like, Felicity on Arrow is like that, right?
Yes.
That is a kind of relationship that could work here, but it doesn't feel to me like that's it at all. It feels to me like this is, you know, the Patricia Arquette has a special vision and James Vanderbeek's got a square jaw and they're going to fight crime. And occasionally the fat kid will come over and type in a password. All the while, Peter McNichol, who's Patricia Arquette's boss, he just looks on and, you know, shaking his head. And
I love his name apparently is Stavros Sifter. Assistant director Stavros Sifter.
Yeah, Sifter.
And FBI agent Elijah Mundo.
Elijah Mundo. You got to give him credit for
somebody
that one.
Somebody smoked a huge, huge bowl when they did this one. Wow.
CSI Cyber. Well, that's my report. That's my book report about CSI Cyber.
Excellent. Excellent. That was torture. You know what, though? You're like such an A student. You took good notes. You got a thorough analysis of the plot. You pointed out what happens and funny moments. You know, look.
I'm a good husband. I watched this while my wife was out in the living room. I went back into the back and watched this and didn't force her to watch
it.
Didn't
have to see it. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that. Tim said I gotta go watch this crap.
Oh, she knew that. And I was like, I'm not gonna make you watch this. I did. I actually did make her watch the scene where they try to figure out that it's an auction because I said, this is too funny. You have to see this.
I love the whole let's go to high. People go to high ground.
They go to high ground. Yeah. They do. That's
emphasis
what happens.
On
I can
high.
See it.
No doubt.
So next week's episode is titled CMND:\crash, which apparently is their suggestion of like a command, like Control-Alt-Delete or something. But it's, again, as we said last week, not a thing. Don't know what it's there. Don't know what it's about. Not going to watch it. Done with CSI Cyber. But thank you. Thank you, Tim, for letting me. Also, I should say, CSI Franchise Report. I Can See for Miles is the Who song that they used in the theme song for CSI Cyber, which is
you
not,
can see
not
from
a bad
miles.
Choice.
Oh, all through all the wires,
all through all the cyber, yeah,
just through the cyber,
through the cyber,
to the invisible cyber part where the computer has an accent.
Yep.
Oh my God, I enjoyed this so much. Thank you. This was a very good laugh for me.
Good
and torturing you.
I'm glad to have. Let's not do it again sometime.
No, let's not do that again, right? Oh my God. Okay, so everybody who's curious, I guess scratch off CBS Cyber.
CSI Cyber available where all CSIs are sold, which is CBS. So
which I can't, I keep saying CBS and CSI. I just, clearly, I can't.
The C in CBS stands for CSI. The C in CSI stands for CBS. It's C's all the way down. Cyber's all the way down.
I think you have, like, you know how, like, when you watch one of those commercials and then the little voice comes at the end and says, you know, not really a doctor or whatever like that. I think it should say not a thing.
Not a thing.
Yeah. Command/black crash. Not a thing.
Not a thing.
All right.
I also saw something.
Oh, that, my God. You watched more stuff?
I watched more stuff. I also saw something that was great, and it's something that you wrote a review about this week. We mentioned it briefly last time. I saw the pilot, or I guess first episode. I think they might have gone straight to series, of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And I laughed out loud, like, 10 times watching it. It was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I just put my review up the other day, and I watched the first 6 episodes. They all stick together very well.
All 13 are up on Netflix as of March 6th, as of now.
As of now. You can go right now and watch them all. I'm probably going to go back there and finish it off, because I did like the I did, like I said in my review, I did like all the 6 that I watched, and I just think there was so much there. And also, I wanted to see, because I think that you know, Ellie Kemper is so magnificent in the role, and of course Jane Krakowski just sort of plays Jenna Malone all over again.
There's some great Carol Kane in there too.
Carol Kane's in there too. I tweeted out one of my favorite jokes from one of the future episodes. And I would repeat it here, because it was one of the ones I did laugh out a lot loud at a bunch of the stuff. It's very 30 Rock in so many ways.
It
That's
is
one of my
so
favorite.
30 Rock. The whole tone of it, the way it's shot, the music, it is all 30 Rock.
It's so, yeah, I just, there's so much of it. And that's like one of my favorite shows. But there's a moment when her roommate Titus is talking about Titus, the gay unemployed actor and singer who can't get a job to save his life. And he's been trying to for like 10 years or so. There's some very funny physical jokes, very funny visual jokes about he's trying to update his headshot, and it's back. It's literally like kid in play era 80s. headshot. But one of the things that Titus says to her, he was talking about a nemesis actor, and he starts it by saying this line, which I thought was great. He says, when I first arrived here, they were doing an all-black production of Oklahoma called Alabama.
Man.
That just slayed me. I had to hit the pause button. An all-black production of Oklahoma called Alabama.
It's got the kind of anarchic tone and pace of 30 Rock. It felt to me really much like this is set in the world of 30 Rock, essentially, except it's about this woman, Kimmy Schmidt, instead, because it's that weird and manic, and the music really helps a lot. I assume Tina Fey's husband did the music for this, just like he did for 30 Rock. Sounds exactly like the 30 Rock music.
They have so much that they can make fun of. I mean, in this podcast, that's probably the main thing we should be telling people is right now is get out and not now, you have to finish listening, but then get out and watch or download Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt from Netflix. For sure.
That's a good I haven't laughed that hard in a long time. It was put me back in the 30 Rock feel. If you liked 30 Rock, then you absolutely have to watch it.
Well, you know what's exciting about this? Obviously, Netflix does not care about numbers. We're not going to worry about their ratings. The Last Man on Earth, which I loved, had such a great success. It came out of the gates very strong on Sunday with its hour-long premiere. So that was such good news. It's doing well, even in L plus 7, Live plus 7. And then just to reiterate, Fresh Off the Boat is a slam dunk hit. Not only did it work out well on Wednesdays in the sort of the protected slot, but since it's moved to Tuesdays, it has done amazing, amazing business. So I'm super excited about that. Those are three freshman series that everybody should be watching right now. So comedy is in a good place right now on TV.
Yeah, good call on Last Man on Earth. I watched that, and I'll say this: what I think I said this about Jane the Virgin too, which is, hey, that Tim Goodman, he can recognize a good show and point you to it, because that Last Man on Earth, I really loved it. I loved that. I loved every little bit of that.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed going in unspoiled enough to not know about some guest star, co-star
right?
action that was happening.
I was so annoyed when I was reading everybody spoiling that on the net. I was just like, oh, people, come on.
Yeah, it's a thing of beauty. It made me laugh out loud, that reveal, and then the whole thing afterward. It's just good stuff. And unlike we have a letter, actually, which I might as well read it now. I thought that this was really great, and I don't disagree with anything that the Bill M in the 602 and 360, he's in two area codes.
Whoa.
He's bicodal.
Yeah.
Bill M says, I'm working very hard avoiding many practical problems with this show. I like the silliness and the what would I do part. But Tucson in the summer is over 100 degrees. Gasoline goes bad in 6 to 12 months. Most canned goods might last 2 years, but anything in a bag would only last a year at most. Cesspool, ooh, where are the clouds of flies and him getting sick because of it, and the smell. Daily consumption of increasing amounts of alcohol hasn't killed him directly or indirectly. Water still in storage tank, no bodies, no destruction, no cats or dogs. there's a series called Life After People from the History Channel, which shows how buildings and infrastructure decay. I'll try to get past these and focus on the silly, but for me, it'll be tough. I get how, as somebody who's read many apocalypse books, I thought about that. I thought this mm-hmm. is the most gentle apocalypse ever, but you know what? I'm going to go with it. I like the idea that what if there was an apocalypse and this guy was the last man on Earth, and it turned out it wasn't so bad. Practically, you know, there are probably dark times ahead for Will Forte if you're talking about like the real world, but you know, it's a show. I really enjoy the fact that it's that ridiculous and what a crazy premise. And I love the premiere. So I'm going to say, I hear you, Bill M, but it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, that's, I agree. I hear him as well, Bill. Well done. And bicodal, very good turn of mm-hmm. phrase there, Jason. But I had the same thing. I was like, you know, it's a comedy, and it's a really fresh idea. And part of the freshness is I'm just going to be, you know, don't make it like a too realistic. Don't make it a zombie. Not like zombies are realistic. I don't want to see the carnage in the streets. I like the fact that he's like a ghost town. And what would it be like in a ghost town? And then you know, they can just make up their own stuff from there. I was like, okay, I'm in, right? I mean, I teach a class where one of the things we talk about a lot is the opt-in and opt-out moment, which is that is a thing. Unlike mm-hmm. CSI Cyber, that is a thing. People understand that in the business. Usually there are moments in a thing where they know that the audience is either going to opt in and opt out. And you know, famously, I always bring up the scene in Lost in the pilot where they're on a tropical island and then they shoot a polar bear. And so forget like that you can't see the whatever monsters in the woods or whatever. That's your famous big bad that they don't reveal. But the polar bear moment is a very typical opt in opt out moment. And for me, I opted in immediately when that happened. So, but as far as Last Man on Earth, I did not opt out when I knew that there was it was too clean.
Yeah. I imagine that if the show goes along, that at some point we'll get a little bit more about why there are no bodies, for example. Perhaps they all dissolved into dust or something like
sure,
that.
Sure, absolutely.
And you know, make a joke out, have a funny joke about why there are no bodies and why there are no animals or whatever it is.
Oh yeah, and those guys are really talented. The guys who did this are the guys behind the Lego Movie, and they're really smart and they're funny. The writing staff is very strong. They've got writers through that have been on other good shows. They're going to make this work. And even if it's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, hey, it's a comedy. We just made them all disappear into dust or something like you just said. So it'll work. It'll work.
Yeah, there'll be a funny – I think there may be a funny reason for a bunch of it. Like, and it could be as simple as saying, you know, aren't you worried about that food? It's been 3 years. Won't it go bad? And you know, shrug and say, you know, everything's over-engineered. I figure it'll be fine. It doesn't matter. Or they'll show them, you know, they're planting a garden, right? I mean, I imagine that some of that will go on too. So,
yeah.
But it was funny. Bottom line, it was funny. And unlike anything I'd seen before, which I thought was really great, an apocalypse comedy. Short of a Shaun of the Dead, I haven't seen anything like that. So,
exactly. Love that. Now you just mentioned that. I want to go see that again.
That's good. Billy and Billy, you reviewed this week. I think mm-hmm. we mentioned that. That's the DirecTV show. Anything now that your review is out there?
Now that I've seen it, yeah. You know, it's going to be some strikes for people. I think that the fact that it's on DirecTV only is one strike, and you know, people definitely have issues with Neil LaBute and his tone and the things that his topics and sort of aggressively unlikable things, but. I will say this. I found it like this is a compliment. So I actually didn't mind. I actually liked the episodes I saw. And, you know, they kind of I don't know. I felt like, you know, because the whole thing is they're step siblings and they're in love and they're having sex and all, whatever. Well, not in love yet, but they're definitely having sex. So it's like the creepy, icky, like, thing. But I got to say that, like, it is, but it isn't. Like, it's not such a far-fetched thing where you're just like, oh, my God, this is so I'm going to throw up in my mouth or something. It's like they just don't. It never really comes off that way. And I think that because they maybe wanted it to be more shocking, that they sometimes say stuff like they have them say, oh, my brother or my sister, and then they correct them and say stepbrother or stepsister. And it's not even until the second episode where they're like, oh, that we're actually not from – like both of us are not from the same mother or father. We are actually from, you know, blended families. Which is also – it's still not okay, but it's, you know, on the level of when we're talking about this, that is probably the more acceptable taboo level that you're going to go into. So I just found like once that was removed, it's really just – it's a rom-com. And so now what has to happen, I think, going forward is that you can do the first 10 episodes of the season and have them be people and reacting to it because they haven't even told their friends yet. But I think that at some point that as a hook has to become secondary and then them as characters have to be, because otherwise it's just a one note joke, right? I mean, it's just one note premise. So I think that, it has to move beyond that, but I found it actually pretty well done and it has its moments and the people are like Adrian Brody's very likable. So there's a lot of stuff that was going on in there that I thought was, it was good.
I actually know a married couple, like a married 20 years couple, who met because their parents got married.
See?
Right? It's a real thing. And their parents' marriage didn't last. But their marriage has.
Wow.
So it happens. I mean,
it takes all kinds.
When it's later in life, I mean, is it that unreasonable to have, like, if your two divorced parents see something in each other? Would that not map to the fact that perhaps somebody who's like their parents might also like somebody who's, I don't know. It's weird, but it's not that weird.
It's not. The premise for this isn't that like they just grew up in the same small town
it's like a meet cute, right?
Yeah. They haven't seen each other in years and they actually see each other when their parents, you know, are, you know, within their parents have like a disastrous marriage that shouldn't be redone, but they're renewing their vows. And that's when they meet each other and they haven't talked. And, you know, I think the premise is they haven't seen each other in like years. So, you know, they don't even know what they look like basically. So it's funny because I did think that they ended up falling back on like, oh, let's try to make this a little bit more gross. You know, they both call mom, but it's really her mom. That kind of felt forced, you know. It's just they was using it to make it seem a little more gross. But I take that away, and you could have just made a rom com. I like the character, so I'm going to continue watching that for sure.
What about Battle Creek? That was another one that you reviewed after we talked last week.
And I watched a lot of the. Yeah, it's true. It's funny. I have to tell you. Next week I am going to Big Sur for 3 days to sort of decompress. I cannot wait to get there. I just want you to know that because I've seen so much television and people were like, oh, did you watch that show? I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand. I watched 3 or 6 or 4 episodes of it. It's so, I mean, like my job's not that hard, but there's just so much TV right now. I'm very anti too much TV right now. So, they sent the whole season of Battle Creek, but I watched like 3.5 of those episodes one night. And I will say this, the pilot is very good. It's very Vince Gilligan, the way they set it up. I'm wondering if it becomes a little more David Shore from House as it goes along because he's the day-to-day showrunner, and he's not quite as quirky as Vince Gilligan. Yeah, but you know what? I just thought, God, this is a CBS show. See, I think when they do the Xerox copy version and they're in their fifth copy, like CSI Cyber, they tend to not be as good. When they come out and they do something original or they do something that's a first time we've seen it, it's a procedural, it's a CBS procedural, that is usually very good. Right. And they are the home for that. And people really have a hunger for that. That's comfort food. And so I think that Battle Creek, it's so lucky that it landed on CBS because it really is sort of two fish out of water, but a buddy cop, but they're not buddies. a little bit bigger mystery to it. They have some funny stuff because they're in Battle Creek, Michigan. But it worked. You know, it totally worked. I thought, like, wow, they haven't quite figured out how to use all of their supporting cast, because they have a lot of supporting cast in the 3.5 episodes that I watched of it. Almost four. But, you know, I already knew where it was going. It was kind of predictable at that point. You really watch it for the characters. You don't really watch it for the crime. And that way I thought, you know what? If you were somebody who did not have a lot of television to watch, like I do, and you were just like, oh, I'll watch this. It's kind of like – it's like an Elementary, or it's a Person of Interest. It's not – I mean, they're not that good, but of those two shows. But they're not as good as those two shows. But Battle Creek is something that I could see – myself in another life watching and liking, and then when the hour's over, it just goes click and it's not in my brain anymore.
All right, that's good.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
The Returned is coming up. This is now, we should be clear, this is a remake. Is this a remake of the other show that's called The Returned, or is this a remake of the show that was The Revenants?
This is The Revenants.
Revenant.
Uh-huh.
I don't speak French, so yeah, okay.
Here's the thing. So just to be clear, it's the French version we call it The Returned. Somebody made an American version called Resurrection, which is not American version of The Returned, wink, wink. But it's also based on a book called The Returned.
Oh, my God.
Which, by the way, I immediately said, oh, my God, whoever wrote this book – should be sued by the people who actually made the French version of The Returned, because it's the whole premise.
Right.
But that didn't happen, and, you know, whatever. So that show is still on the air, Resurrection. And but no, this is A&E, Carlton Cuse and A&E doing a shot-for-shot remake, just like Grace Point, I hate to say, or just like Broadchurch and how Grace Point did that.
Yep.
It'll be a shot-for-shot remake of the French version of The Returned, and I have not seen it. I'm about to waste my rest of my weekend watching it.
Well, if you need a break, CSI Cyber, get that.
Oh my God,
get that ramped up.
Right, like I should feel. I actually should say, you know what? At least I'm not watching
that
CSI Cyber. Uh-huh. But I did see the extended cut down of The Returned. It was not impressive, because it was like, oh, I've seen this before, and I have very low expectations of shot-for-shot remakes being anything, or being, you know, at least it's not Broadchurch, where we share the common language.
Right.
This we definitely had to read the French subtitles in The Returned. But I just don't see the point of it. So artistically, because I don't care about ratings. Like, my job is not to care about ratings. So when people say, oh, you know, we're redoing it because – you know, we might get 10 million people to watch this, whereas The Return got, you know, how many people watch that? I don't care. I care about the quality. And if you're going to just shoot something shot for shot, you're going to miss so many of the nuances that made the original so much better. So, yeah.
So we'll find out, I guess, next week if this was Grace Pointed or not.
Yes.
But
if I add another day onto my stay in Big Sur, you'll know it was really bad.
Yeah. Just have to decompress a little bit.
I do. Yeah. Recharge the batteries.
Anything else coming up that we should watch for?
Well, I think, in fairness to A&E, and I don't want to, and even Carlton Cuse, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, crap on that. Bates Motel is coming back for, I believe, season 3, and it's it starts on Monday, same day as The Returned. And I gotta say, even though it's like, Bates Motel is not something that I'm probably gonna watch regularly, because there's just too much TV right now. I really enjoyed the first season. I loved the first season. I thought the second season was pretty good, or actually a lot of people thought it was better, but I just found like I was losing interest in it because there was just so much other stuff on TV. But again, if you're focused on a lesser number of shows, and Bates Motel is one of your shows, it's a good one. You know, it's absolutely, I think people should be watching that when it returns. I can't, it's too early to say about The Return, but my hunch is it's not something that it's going to be exciting. And then other than that, no, there's really nothing that's coming back up, because American Crime is already done, and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is available on Netflix now, and Secrets and Lies is already out, and you know, The Last Man on Earth. Hope people are watching that. So the big late February, early fall push is starting to slow down, thankfully.
Give you a little break.
Yes.
And watch more CSI Cyber instead.
By the way, The Slap is still on the air.
In fact, I saw that Allegiance, this actually is a perfect transfer into some of our listener mail, because Owen from the 416, that's Toronto, Canada, says...
Toronto. I want to visit Toronto badly.
So it's nice. Although it is, having been there a couple of times, it is a fascinating mixture of sort of European vibe and Rust Belt vibe, because it is both. So it's sort of like... Right. If you know, and I don't mean this as an insult, I swear, it is like a it is like a European Cleveland. It is a very strange combination. It's a European Pittsburgh. It's weird, but it's nice. I like Toronto a lot. Anyway, Owen,
I'm sure they're not going to use
The European Cleveland. Put that in the tourist brochure. NBC just canceled Allegiance and moved The Slap. No surprise on the Allegiance news. Do you think they'll cancel The Snap as well, or let it run its low rated course?
They're going to let it run its course because they've already paid for it. It's a limited series. And they basically told people, they promised people that they would have a conclusion and you would find out what happened to all these people. And all these famous actors who were in it would be outraged if it didn't run its whole thing. And then, you know, we're actually in an era right now. I say this as they canceled Allegiance, but we're kind of in an era right now where network television really has to not piss off anyone anymore to stay viable, because the competition is so strong. So yes, did they cancel Allegiance in the middle of its run or the early stages of its run? Yeah, absolutely. But we could have told them that, right? I mean,
did we even talk about Allegiance? And if we did, I've completely blocked it from my mind.
Oh, we did. It's the modern version of The Americans.
Right. It's the modern knockoff of The Americans. Okay.
Yeah. It's
gone.
Yeah. Boom. It's not the 80s era Cold War. It's the 2015 era Cold War. With the Russians.
Yeah. All right.
Sleeper cells. Mm-hmm.
I know that one. Well,
yeah, that one's
goodbye.
Dead.
Good riddance.
Yeah.
I say. Yeah. Having never seen it.
Yet.
Yet, indeed. It's been taken out by NBC like a political opponent taken out by Putin. Boom.
Yeah. Yo,
take that, Putin.
Look at you making it right all about Putin again.
Now Canada's back on my side, right?
Yes.
Thanks, Toronto.
Thanks, Toronto. But you know what, though? I want to see Toronto. Vancouver's that's my go-to city. I love Vancouver, though.
It is great.
Canada. Canadians are so nice.
They are. They're the best. Megan from the 402.
Ooh.
We've heard from her before.
Yes, we did. And where did we spot that? Do you remember?
The 402?
Uh-huh.
It's in Nebraska.
Oh, right. Okay.
Thanks for the entertaining and informative show. I added Last Men on Earth to my DVR just in time for the first episode. My question is completely unrelated. All right. But
nice.
It is something that I've always wondered about. Why do shows air so sporadically? For instance, Revenge is one of my guilty pleasures. It was off for the entire month of February. This after being off for almost all of December for the mid-season break. It's coming back this week, but I'm having a hard time even remembering what was happening. Why do shows take so many breaks when they can really ruin the flow of a show? It feels especially egregious now because shows have mid-season breaks. I'm genuinely curious. Is this some kind of behind-the-scenes difficulty? It seems like it would be easy enough to write most of the show during the season and mid-season breaks, but maybe that's not possible. So I think this is a great question, and I think it's changed over time. I mean, the bottom line is, right, it's 52 weeks in a year, and no show has more than like 22 episodes, if that. So they can only run certain times of year. But I think she makes a really good point here, was how can you have a mid-season break and then come back and then go away again? That's like so many breaks in the middle of your, and you kind of lose the flow of the storyline, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that to me, that's the problem with it right now. And that's what the industry, that's what they're struggling with. The broadcast networks are struggling with this kind of old school idea of like how they do the scheduling. And it's like they're not paying attention to what a difficult well that they're in, that they've mm-hmm. fallen down this well and they can't get out. And they're just like, they're not changing rapidly enough. And they're making these mistakes that they've made in the past. Let's say they're making mistakes now that in the past would have been just fine. But yeah, you hit it right in the head. It's two things. It's a math question, because it used to be, we had a TV season and it was 36 weeks, not 52. So even if it's 36 weeks, and 22 episodes, you have, you know, you have 14 of trying to figure it out, right? So, you know, one of the ideas was you could just like do a 13 episode cable special and stick it between the two and then have them come back.
Right.
So yes, it's harder to fill out the schedule, but she's hit it right. Megan's hit it right in the head here because yeah, you can't do that. You literally cannot do that. You can't have a break because people are going to A, forget about you, forget the plot, find new shows because they're clearly, as I've just stated, they're premiering all over the channels. The ability to lose people is it's so easy. It's monumental risk to do that. But if you come back and then leave again, then you're just a dumbass. That's NBC and ABC being dumbasses. I mean, I think that CBS probably schedules a little bit better. They're a little bit more savvy about that, but their audience is also different. I don't get it either. I think that people should need to come out. I think that networks need to stop the whole, we're going to cut the shows in half. I think that they need to revert back and run 22 straight. Mm. And they just need to do a better job of filling the gaps, creating more shows, even if it has to be reality shows that fill the time.
I didn't mind cutting them in mid-season. Well, so Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just came back.
Right.
What they did there is they put Agent Carter in between. They did a mid-season break, ran Agent Carter in between, which was good. I liked Agent Carter. It was 8 episodes. And they brought back Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And at the time, I thought, oh, well, this is a really good idea. But I agree with you. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. lost all of its momentum. Its story is way too confusing to pick up. And even with the writers knowing that this was going to be the first episode back after a break and after their mid-season finale, you know, after 8 weeks of Agent Carter, I watched the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. mid-season premiere and was not that impressed. It was like confusing and I forgot who the characters were and I forgot what happened. And I'm a more attentive than most viewer. And yet for me, it was already like they lost all their momentum. I'm much less interested in the show than I was when it went off the air, where I was feeling pretty positive about it. And I'm reminded of what 24 did, what Lost did, which is finally say, look, we're going to come on in January and we're going to run them through. And yeah, that means we're going to be off in June instead of May sweeps, but we don't care. We're just going to run them through because that, you know, we want to run this story doesn't work if we break it up. So I'm all for that. I think you got to run them all straight through. Doctor Who, mentioned Doctor Who again, but the same thing. They split their seasons in half, and those are short seasons, right? So they'd run 6 and then go away, and then they come back and run 6 or 7, and that was not good. And this year they ran all 13 straight through, or all 12 straight through. It was much better. So I think that's what you got to bite the bullet, and whatever you order as a TV network, you just got to run it.
I agree. And the thing that it's maddening to me about it happens all the time, but I think you're going to see less of it because we have more TV to choose from. I literally, again, I think as soon as you hit the pause button, you're literally giving people an out. That's their out.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay,
never
no
come
more
back.
Episodes? Yeah, I'm never coming back. It's too dangerous to do that. So, and the thing about cable is if you have 12 or 13 episodes and you split that, my thinking is, what are you doing?
Yeah, there's nothing left.
There's no fatigue factor here.
No, I understand.
In 22 episodes or 24 episodes, I can sense there might there's a fatigue thing. But not with 13. Come on.
And even if you've got 22 network episodes, you know, that second half better be promoted like it's a new season launch because, you know, people are going to have forgotten and you're going to need to lure them back. But if you've got 13, just run them.
Oh, yeah. And you know, there are exceptions, right? There's two rules to this, which are annoying. And one of them is like, so Fox, there's no way Fox is going to take Empire off the air right now. It's the most popular show on TV. So, and it's the hottest show on TV right now. So why would they even think about pulling that off the air? Right. But let's just say, you know, it comes back next year and it's just as hot. They could tinker with it. They could say, we're going to exploit your love of it. And we're going to move it in pieces. I hope they don't do that. But what happens, which we're just about to witness is that, as you know, so they split the Mad Men seasons just like they split the Breaking Bad seasons.
Yeah.
But the difference there is a smaller audience, totally devoted. They're going to come back no matter what. Same thing with Walking Dead. They're going to come back no matter what. It's these niche cable channels who are using it. That's like their only tool. They're using it to say, okay, we're going to try to keep you interested in our schedule on shows that you will never miss. Overall, a long period there's a risk in that is if it runs too long and you lose interest, you don't come back. The other thing that helped those two shows. You know, we're about to, in April, about to see the return of the last 7 episodes of Mad Men. But what helped them is by splitting those seasons, it put them into 2 different Emmy categories.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, I was going to say they're slow playing it. I mean, essentially AMC knew they had 1 season worth left, and so they they split both of them into 2 seasons. But it was really 1 season. I think I think they were produced as a single season.
Yes,
and then just split in half and called 2 seasons. But, you know, they're not.
No, but they, in this case, because you're looking at a super high level of equality, everybody, Vince Gilligan and Matt Weiner, of course, had to be – they don't like it. But they had to be on board because, as what Weiner said, the difficult thing you're making him do is you're making him have two – finales.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
right.
And 2 broken stories. So he has to have a premiere and a finale and then a premiere and a finale. And it's just, as a writer, that kind of messes up the flow of the arc of your story.
Well, instead of telling 1 13 episode chapter, you're telling 2, you know, 6 and 7 episode chapters. And you have to structure your story accordingly. And I'm sure they did that. I mean, I know that was all part of the conversation. It's not like AMC just said, yeah, we're just going to hold on to these last 7. Yeah.
We're gonna cut it right here.
Don't tell anybody.
No.
Other networks have done that, but that's not what happened here. But,
and you know what? We're gonna see less and less of this. I mean, obviously, we've got a huge hit with Empire on Fox, and you've got a huge hit with The Walking Dead on AMC. So they can toy with that, but we're running out of those kind of shows, right? And I just think, again, going back to it, it's the pool. The pool is – we're drowning in the pool of available shows. So do something like that programming nonsense at your own risk.
Yeah, you never want to lose momentum now.
Mm-mm.
All right. Well, that was a really good letter from Megan in the 402. Brad in the 905.
Whoa.
Southern Ontario, so near Toronto but not Toronto. More Canadians. Oh. Hey, Canadians.
Oh, nice. Way to go, Canada.
Says, I just finished watching both seasons of Hannibal on Netflix.
Mm.
I'm astonished that a show with Hannibal's distinct creative voice is a network TV show, especially with the gory visuals and, well, cannibalism. Seems more like something you'd see on cable. What are your recent thoughts on this show, and what's your take on NBC's support for it? Apparently it's not returning until this summer. What do you think, Hannibal?
Hannibal's, is it everything he just said? It's extremely well done. It is shot and looks like a cable show. Its content is cable quality, and kind of cable grossness, to be honest. It's a well-documented story that the NBC had no idea what it had. It had no idea what it was doing with the show, and gave it almost no promotion at the beginning. And then critics loved it. And then they were like, oh, and even when the critics were slobbering all over it, they still had no idea what they had. And then they brought it back again, and they don't know what they're doing with it for sure. But as far as me watching it, I can't anymore. I just it's too disturbingly gross for me. I mean, I like gross. I mean, I can take a lot of violence. I don't mind the zombies eating people on The Walking Dead, but when the level of gore and the actually like cooking somebody up kind of thing that Hannibal does, that's where you lose me. I can't anymore. I think it was the end of the 3rd season. It was basically just splatter porn at that point, and I couldn't go for that.
Those are your thoughts, Brad, about Hannibal? our good pal George D, always from the 415.
Always, yeah. Area code of record.
Says, per your Bastard Machine post, what's the best show for which you cannot make time?
Oh man.
I'll give you something here. I made the mistake, as it turns out, of not having enough time to get on board with Justified early on.
Right. Uh-huh.
And my wife was saying this to me the other day as the Justified reaches its conclusion. She says, that is absolutely the best show that she watches without me. She said, you should be regretting that decision. So I'm going to say, for me, the one that I didn't make time for, and now it's too late, I'm going to have to go back and watch it some other time, is Justified, of a show that I probably should be watching, and I'm just not. I liked it. I just didn't have enough time amidst everything else I was watching at the time. And then, you know, and then it was too late because then I was way behind.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, Outlander a lot of stuff on Stars that I don't watch. I probably should be watching. I mean, I watch it, but I watch it late. I watch it when the season's over. You know, I'm Black Sails. I'm not watching that. I mean, some of these are things where I'm not, you know, I'm not missing out on Mad Men level quality, but I'm missing out on stuff that's really entertaining, like Banshee. I'm not following on that up that. I tend to get behind on sitcoms that I love a lot, like The Goldbergs. I know that I always watch The Goldbergs, but I tend to binge it. So I'm not involved. You know, it can stack up 10 deep sometimes or 8 yeah. deep. And that's a sign to me that I'm not watching it. And when that happens to shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I just drop them.
Yeah.
There's too many of them. I just give up. I think that, you know, and look, I'm not even watching like Peaky Blinders, and I'm not watching Black Mirror, which people are watching on streaming services, and I should probably be watching them, but I'm not, because there's too much other stuff. So that's a good one. I should probably be watching Bates Motel.
Yeah.
And I'm not, kind of on that one. I liked Empire, and people are so addicted to it. It's like gooey candy that they're all into, and everybody's talking about it. But it's not a show. I mean, I like it, but it's not a show that I feel compelled that I want to watch every week. Right.
And this is the fact of where we are with TV, as you have written, is there's so much being made, but there's so much good that, you know, you basically can't watch all the good stuff anymore. It used to be you could watch all the good stuff and then pick and choose from the rest of the bad stuff that you wanted to watch. But you can't do that now. You cannot watch all the good stuff.
Well, then to me, it's you pile on stuff that are your basics that you watch all the time, like Daily Show.
Yeah.
Right. Last Week Tonight. So I'm like, oh, and for me, like Key and Peele or like all those. It's like and all this great stuff that's on Comedy Central right now, like Broad City. I'm falling behind on those. I need to catch up on all those. And I'm still in the season. I'm just episodes behind. I just too much. Right. And like, yeah. I'm like, oh, right. Those were original Daily Shows. I really got to start watching that again. It's just overwhelming. So
we got one more piece of feedback. This is sort of like a lightning round. This comes from Sam from the 707.
Oh, yeah. We know where that is.
Yeah. Well, how could you forget where the 707 is? You have us ranked behind the 925. We have the world's best wine, the best area code catchphrase, say it backward, the 707. And the bottom of the fifth, I heard FX is going to be running The Riches and Bars back to back this summer. That's a reference. That's an old school reference for the old school TVTM people out there. Sam has these questions for his lightning round. One, in honor of Parks and Rec wrapping up, who was your favorite side character?
Oh, well, I mean, my favorite character in the whole show, side character, I would say Jerry.
Jerry?
Yeah. Jerry, Terry, Gary.
Yep.
All of those were my favorite. But Ron Swanson was my favorite character in the whole show.
I kind of love Purred Hapley.
Yeah,
the literal broadcaster was always one.
But Purred is, you know, I want to see a supercut of all the great Purred moments. So yeah, Purred and Jerry are solid choices.
So Sam votes for a tie between Councilman Jam and John Ralphio. John Ralphio, that is a classic character.
But those guys, they are classic characters. Both of those guys annoyed me so much. It was like I didn't get the joy. I know I'm supposed to be annoyed by their characters, but I like to have the joy of it.
I really liked, she wasn't super funny, but really sweet. And I thought that was a nice thing for a show that was really sweet. I liked Lucy, Natalie Morales. I thought she was really great when she was sort of Tom's would-be girlfriend. And I love that they brought her back at the end.
You can't have enough Natalie Morales.
She's really nice. The one who's not on the Today Show, the one who was in the middleman. She's really great.
Mm-hmm.
Number two question. How are you enjoying The Jinx?
Oh,
I am on the edge of my seat with each episode, and at the end of episode 4, my jaw dropped. I agree. I'm watching them as they go, and I am loving it.
I think the word that doesn't apply there is enjoy.
Yeah, well, that's true. It is fascinating and terrible, and it just, I mean, at several points, it's a sign of a good documentary, especially some kind of crime documentary like this, where you're watching, you're like, I cannot believe this happened. I cannot believe these details actually happened.
Yeah, that it is a thing where it's a little like Serial, but I also think it's not as popular as that. And I think that people will come out of this stupor of too many shows, and then if they have, you know, HBO and they have HBO Go, they'll go back and they'll watch it and they'll go, oh my God, what?
Yeah. It would work great as a binge watch kind of thing, but I like the fact that they're not saying, hey, everybody, we made a 6-hour documentary series, a documentary, watch a 6-hour movie. It's like, no, right. Nobody's going to do that, but will I watch 6 installments of The Jinx? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Did you say that Robert Durst was at the TV Critics Press Tour?
No, he was not. He was, it was just, that would be kind of scary.
Just
right?
The guy, no, the interviewer. Yeah. I just thought, I mean, watching this story, I keep thinking it would be perfectly reasonable for the guy who probably killed all these people to just show up at press tour and be interviewed and be all shifty and lie to everybody and get away with it again.
Well, I mean, I will say that, a great question to the director was, did you ever worry about your own life?
Yeah.
That's a great question. And he's like, well, my wife certainly did.
We should say allegedly. People near him seem to occasionally die. So
in very gruesome ways.
That is the Jinx. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number 3, have you ever watched anything on the Audience Network?
Yes, I tried to. Well, I mean, there's some good stuff I think that's there. I just reviewed Billy and Billy. That's on the Audience Network. But I also did, I'm going to forget what it was. It was the...
I can give you the tips. Sam likes Less Than Kind, and which is Canadian, and is looking forward to Full Circle with Stacey Keach, apparently.
Oh, those two, I don't know. Huh. But no, what was their original one that they put on that channel? And it had it was supposed to be based in Oakland. They did some exterior.
Oh yeah, that was when I had dinner with you that time, and you were talking to me about how there was this terrible show set in Oakland.
Yes, was I can't that, even remember it. Now. They renewed it.
Oh yeah, I don't even.
I
remember
was like,
the name
what?
Of that.
You renewed it? And then there was also apparently there was a good. Apparently they also had that
Rogue.
Rogue. That's
Rogue.
What it was.
Andy Newton, yeah, that's right.
Yes, Andy Newton. I think there was one. There was like an MMA series, like a drama based MMA series, and apparently that was pretty good. I didn't watch that either, though. Too much television.
Too much TV. And then number 4, which is when one of my good college friends had his first kid, I realized in these days of Netflix and on demand, we can watch the shows we grew up with. We grew up on with our kids. As opposed to my parents, who would just try to explain to you why Howdy Doody was worth watching. Do you recommend something as a must watch? What age do you start your kid on The Simpsons versus South Park, for example?
That's a tough one. I mean, I find it eventually. I'm kind of a, I don't know, I guess I'm kind of a prude in a lot of ways. My kids are, I have a 14-year-old daughter and a son who's almost 12. And, you know, I held out on The Simpsons for a super long time. And then they just end up watching it at somebody else's house. So, you know, you do pick up on stuff that is kind of inappropriate. And certainly stuff like, you know, stuff on South Park. It'll eventually come there. And I have a very open philosophy about a lot of things like swear words and, you know, that you can't give them too much power. It's just a word, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, it's hard. I think that. That you don't want to have content that is too much for them to take.
I always thought that, for some innuendo kind of stuff, I felt like there was really no age limit for that stuff, because I know, looking back on stuff I watched when I was a kid, I didn't get it until I was capable of getting it.
Absolutely.
And before then, it just was totally over my head. And so it was not a problem. And then there's other stuff where you're like, wow, this is pretty much in your face and it's tougher. I tried to expose my kids to The Simpsons and they thought it was okay, but kind of weird. My son has just started watching SpongeBob a little bit and liking that. I don't watch those anywhere near him. But I don't know. It's all there.
And all right, I do have a story now, because I do remember this. When I was thinking about whether Simpsons would be appropriate enough for them, and they have not watched South Park yet, which is a show I love. I mean, they'll eventually watch all the stuff. And they are the stuff that's a little bit different is that they listen to my kind of music, and there's all kinds of swear words and stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, lyrically, there's issues to be had if you follow the narrative flow of what the song means. But as far as TV show, when I was worried about them watching Simpsons, they went ahead at a friend's house and started watching Futurama, which is way worse.
Yeah.
Way worse as far as like innuendos and stuff like that. So yeah, they by the time they were totally indoctrinated into Futurama, then Simpsons was like tame in comparison. So they can watch both of those now. And then my little project that I just did, because now, I mean, obviously they've got screens and they can watch whatever they want. My daughter's a huge reader, but she also absorbs shows quickly, and she has her favorites. My son's not that into actual television right now. I'm sure he would rather be doing his video games, mm-hmm. and then doing what 12-year-old boys do, which is strange to me, which is watch YouTube videos about other people watching playing, video games. Yeah, yeah.
Often while playing the video games themselves.
Yeah, very, very meta. but to find something that we could watch together and then sort of like blow their mind, and we it's going to take forever to get through it, but we started all watching Lost together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so interesting. It's fun. Yeah,
we are watching Star Wars Rebels right now.
Oh, I heard family. That was good.
It's pretty good.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty good. Yeah, and it's set in the time that the Star Wars that we would understand, because it's basically right before the first classic Star Wars movie. So it's like all Darth Vader's out there, and there's a rebellion, and you know, it's that's like dinner time fare for us sometimes when we're all sitting around and it's a break from the homework and we're all having just some quick dinner and we'll watch a Star Wars Rebels. So.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say to watch Hannibal.
No.
No? I mean, no Hannibal.
You know, CSI Cyber, maybe.
And have them mock it.
Yeah.
Right?
You got to raise them right.
Have your kids say, you know what, not a thing.
Not a thing at all.
Not a thing.
All right, I think we've reached the end.
We have.
There's a whole other week of television to come, but this one is over, I think.
Yes, this one's in the books.
Make it stop!
Yeah. Make it stop!
Yeah. I made it stop. I deleted CSI Cyber off my TiVo.
Okay. You know what? Look, you took one for the team, though.
Yeah, I know.
The TVTM team.
Yep, that's right.
Very thankful that you did that.
TV Torture Machine.
I have some advice for you now that you've finished watching and you survived that first episode.
Yep.
Seek higher ground.
That's good. Good tip. Are you a cyber psychologist by any chance?
You know it.
Dr. Elijah Mundo. No, he's not a doctor. He doesn't have a degree. Don't trust anything he says. Looks like that guy from Dawson's Creek.
Correctamundo.
Correct-e-mundo. Mm-hmm. All right, Tim, it's been a pleasure as always. We should do the numbers, which aren't numbers. Tweet at Tim at Bastard Machine. Tweet at me at Jay Snell. You can tweet to the podcast itself at TVTM. You can send us an email, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. And you can leave messages on the Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Those are the ways to reach us. And we do read your letters on the podcast. So keep on sending them in.
Woohoo!
All right, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you next week.
Okay.